Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Midweek Metagame. I'm Yellow Hat, and I'm finally joined again by my two regular co-hosts, Pat. Welcome back.
Hi. You're introducing yourself as Yellow Hat now. You threw me off. Hi, everyone. It's nice to be back.
Little curveball. And, of course, the one and only Canister.
Hello, hello.
We've got a lot of modern to talk about. Both Canister and I were in Prague. He was competing. I was casting. We also have a bit of spoiler talk. Maybe I've been mostly focused on Standard. But Canister, I think, has a few thoughts about some cards that might be good in Pioneer. And lots to talk about. All three of us for United. Before we get into the app, I'd like to remind you, if you want to support us, patreon.com/midweekmetagame. You can support us there, or you can go sub to Canister's Twitch channel, my channel, Pat's. Pat doesn't need the money. He's good.
No, that's right. I'm sorted. Don't worry.
So, yeah, our content will always be free, but any help is always appreciated. Well. Another week, a new modern after the outburst ban, and there was a big tournament in Prague, over 500 players. Canister, you were playing, I was casting. And we saw some new things, nothing too crazy, I would say, but still interesting to kind of break down what happened, how people adapted. So yeah, we're gonna go into that. Maybe Canister, why don't you lead the way since you actually played in the tournament? Why don't you talk about your deck choice, how your tournament went, some thoughts?
My choice, as usual lately, Amulet Titan, which eventually was the deck that took down the entire tournament. Not in my hands, though. I only managed to finish 6-3 on day one, which unfortunately was just shy of qualifying for day two. The rules for qualifying for day two at those LMSs were always either 7-2 or top 64, whichever is greater. Typically, top 64 is greater. I finish in the 67th place, so I got eliminated from the tournament on day one. But was not unhappy about my choice. I played Amulet with the red splash, with I guess the sickest tech cards in my sideboard being one copy of Thraktask and one copy of Escape to the Wilds.
Ooh, I saw you. I was watching. You had a sick Escape into just perfect Grazer Titan. The one game I was watching.
Yeah, that was a game against Sean where I performed like the very heavy act of sideboarding. I cut one D1 ring, replaced it with one Escape from my sideboard. Just because the ring is not very good against Sean because of Karn, etc. And it certainly did line up perfectly that game. Like, just flipped five perfect cards and I was like, whoa, that's pretty good. So yeah, like that was my experience at the tournament. Overall, it was interesting to see the metagame. I was not really expecting like this level of disappearance from the Cascade decks, but it seems like they really didn't hold up nearly at all. There was like barely any living players even competing in the tournament, and not too many of the Rhino decks either.
Yeah, it was literally 1% of the field. I think 5 living end players total. None of them made day two. And Rhinos, yeah, it was not even the top 5. I think it went Domain Zoo, most played deck by a decent bit. And then maybe Titan? I forget. There was like Titan, Goryeo, Yogg in the top 4, and maybe combination of Murktides was rounding out the top 5. I forget, but yeah, Rhino disappeared, which I found Rhino to be pretty weak recently, and people adapt. Pick Your Poison kind of picks apart the Leyline Draco deck. So not totally surprised.
Yeah, I think Murktide was in that kind of, if you combine Teemer and Is It Murktide, was somewhere in the top 5 kind of most played decks on day 1. The drop-off of Cascade is really kind of surprising. I felt like the Outburst ban, and I don't know if you talked about this in the last episode necessarily, but the Outburst ban was just kind of about as gentle as you can get in terms of trying to take the legs out from strategies like Living End and Rhinos. And taking away just that instant speed interaction, it's surprising to me that you would have such a massive drop off in not only in, like, people turning up and registering the deck, but also performance.
Yeah, we had, before the ban, the last round of RC, Rhinos did terrible, like below 50% win rate for Teemer Rhinos or Domain Rhinos. And I think people who wanted to play the Domain cards, the Leyline and Sign combo, just decided to play Zoo for the most part. The Rhino deck is a little easier to adapt to than Living In. You know, you can play more Verdicts, you can play more Pick Your Poison, just cards that line up a bit better, more artifact enchantment removal. And we kind of saw it in the quarterfinals, Murktide against the Scam Domain Zoo list that made top 8. They, you know, it's a little glass cannon in some ways once people have access to their sideboard card, and they can't cheese as easily with just Leyline Scion.
Yeah, I did watch that quarterfinal match, actually. It was, I can't remember if they were Teemer Murktide or if they were just straight blue-red, but every time the game would look pretty hopeless post-board, and, you know, in the first couple of turns, and then suddenly, oh, wait, there's just giant 8/8s in play and no one's doing anything. And
yeah, Murktide was good. He did have Pick Your Poison in the sideboard.
Yeah, that cuz is obviously very important in that night, in particularly against any Leyline deck. Great one mana versatile card. Dressdown as well is another card that, you know, is pretty impressive in those slots too, where you're kind of taking away this kind of impenetrable fortress of Scion of Draco pretty efficiently when you've got things that present good blockers.
Yeah. Nothing too crazy in the list, except maybe the winner's Titan list. You know, I kind of see Titan through the lens of Canister, and I was curious what your thoughts are. Where he had a Cavern of Souls in the main deck. I'm not sure you usually play that card. He had the Bajuka Bug in the main deck. His spells were pretty stock, pretty much what you're playing. And his sideboard had two Elesh Norn, few unconventional choices, or something I'm not used to anyways.
Yeah, Elesh Norn shows up from, like, here and there in an Amulet right now, especially in the sideboard, as just kind of like a different threat. Like, I think Amulet players at large, and, like, me lately too, have been, like, identifying Sounder's Bug as kind of a weak link of the deck, and, like, a real place of vulnerability, and a card that's easy to attack. You really get screwed if your opponent's subtlety is your Titan after you packed it, like you have to pay on the next turn, and you like are not doing anything. So there is a lot of value in finding replacement cards that you can just draw and cast instead of having to rely on packs, especially in post-board games, so much. So some people are turning to Elesh Norn in that role, which is a card that, you know, requires you to splash. Like, having non-green mana and Amulet is not free. And then also, it can be kind of hit or miss. It has a very powerful effect that affects like roughly half of the opponents that you get to play against, and it's kind of irrelevant against the other half. But then, like, you know, of course, it also has the effect of boosting your own cards. So if you ever resolve a Cultivator Colossus with Elesh Norn on the battlefield, you literally get to draw your entire deck, right? All of your bounce lands bounce two lands, and then you get to go twice. So literally, you will almost assuredly draw your entire deck. So that goes pretty nice, pretty quickly. But I haven't been playing with Elesh Norn too much myself. I've tried it a few times. I haven't been thoroughly impressed by the card, mainly because, as I said, it feels very hit or miss to me. But I understand the reasoning, and you know, with the main decks of the format seemingly coming into the tournament being Domain Zoo, whose removal suite is like Tribal Flames and Leyline Binding, so Elesh Norn virtually impervious against that deck, or the Gorya's Vengeance deck, which also relies on ETBs a lot, and Atraxa is much less scary when she does not draw 5 cards on ETB, right? So yeah, I understand.
Teferi to get rid of it, I think.
Yeah. So I understand the reasoning behind Elesh Norn, and the rest of the choices are like some pretty pretty tech choices, like, and like decide either way on those. I haven't been a big fan of Cavern of Souls, but like I understand it, that some people want to play it and stuff like that. Also, like, yeah, you know, Manic Bog makes sense if you expect a lot of Esper.
Yeah, I wonder how much a bug can slow them down. But it was, I forget his last name, it was Raul from Spain, who won the whole tournament. He had actually top-8ed the last, I think, LMS event in Barcelona was Titan. He started playing the deck, he said, a bit before that Barcelona tournament, made top 8 there. He said in his winner's interview that he didn't play a ton leading to the tournament. I think a bit of Magic Online, and he did the classic get in on at 8 on Breaker. It was him and another player that had the same record. He got in on 8, and I think he swept the top 8. I will say the top 8, his opponents kind of drew poorly for the most part. There was a game against Scam where the opponent just had Blood Moon the whole game stuck on 2 lands. In the final, it was Edris, I believe his name is, on Murktide, that didn't do too much. But yeah, 8 different decks in the top 8. There was a lot of coffers that did well in what you call the winner's metagame, as in, you know, against a deck who do well on day one. If you can survive day one, then I think the coffers deck was supposed to prey on these Scion decks with cards like Edict or Liliana. I saw Devious Cover-Up, that kind of Deadly Cover-Up, that made me happy in these coffers list. I didn't know that was a thing. That's the sweeper I played in Pioneer, the one that Surgical Distraction for 5 mana. So that's kind of a cool card to see. Few different builds, but yeah, Cuffer did well, didn't put anyone in the top 8. 8 different decks. The main zoo did really well on day 1. I think it was 12% of the field on day 1 and 17 or 18 on day 2. So still a good deck. Goryeo was doing good. Lucas Blauhan, maybe the only PT winner in the field. He made top 8 as the first seed. He got the curse. He refused to split in the top 8. And,
well, I guess
that'll get you done.
And he drew terrible against Titan. I think,
but
he had
just a clarification. It depends if you count Mythic Championship winners, right?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Canister.
All right.
You know, but, we did.
Yeah, it was a classic, you know, semi-retired pro comes back, local tournament, crushes. So that's kind of a cool storyline. And yeah, I had a lot of fun casting. I was partnered with the Will Hall XP. He made my job easy, and it was fun. The games were interesting. We had a few fun decks, you know, it's like White Black Midrange or Merfolk. Will even got to cast an Infect match, his pet deck. But at the end of the day, it was mostly established archetype. And yeah, I feel like in the top 8, maybe that Titan list was a little different, and maybe the fact that it was the Scam version of Domain Zoo that made top 8 and not regular Domain Zoo. But yeah, a fun tournament. There was also, you played the standard tournament on day 2. You found some cards.
Polska Aggro, indeed. Yes. I didn't bring a standard deck with myself, so I had to scrounge and try to borrow the deck last minute, and I was served a very nice Boros Convoke decklist for the Classic Qualifier on Sunday. And, you know, I played in that tournament. It was also a 7-round tournament. You basically have to top 8 those to get a qualification for the RC and win some prizes. And unfortunately, I got my second loss in the penultimate round, so I was out of that and only got into the top 16. But this can get us pretty smoothly into the spoilers territory, because the deck that I played, as I said, was Standard Convoke, and I have not been playing Standard at all before that. I have been skipping this RCQ season, and when I got the deck list that I was borrowing to play, I noticed that it runs 4 mountains and 4 plains. So at first I was thinking if it's maybe just a budget version of like something weird, but turns out that that's just how the Convoke decks look in Standard. And let me tell you, like, this deck is going to, like, it's very powerful. It has strong spells, and it's basically the Pioneer deck in Standard, but it's going to get much better with Outlaws of Thunder Junction, which is going to introduce Inspiring Vantage into this deck. The mana base will be a lot easier to bear mentally than those, you know, 8 basic builds.
I always felt like 8 basic lands was a feature of Standard. It kind of made it an enjoyable format. I've been playing Standard too, and every deck I've played has had several basic lands, and that's been great.
Well,
yeah, but it feels bad when you have the allied one, and you're like, it feels kind of arbitrary. Yeah. When
the asymmetry is not desirable.
Yeah, well, like 8 basic lands in an aggro deck, maybe that was a feature of like 5 set Standard decks, but I don't think that's necessarily true or will be true anymore now that Standard is 3 years, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. How big is Standard going to wind up being? 3 years, so it's going to wind up being like 12 sets or something like that.
Yeah, 12 sets.
Fucking hell, that's pretty big.
13, yeah. If you count Aftermath.
I don't know what that is, and I don't know. I refuse to find out.
Yeah, the spoilers have been kind of nuts, honestly. I've been looking at the spoilers for the lens of Standard because the PT's coming up, and a lot of the cards seems like they could be good. It's going to be insane. There's only 1 week. There's 1 week less than usual between the set coming out and the Pro Tour for some reason.
That's kind of cool.
I mean, I guess I don't mind it because we have a big team and probably doesn't put us, you know, probably puts us at an advantage, but it's still like kind of daunting. And there's, you know, we were like, well, you know, the deck's already pretty good, maybe a few additions, but the fast lands kind of change things a bit. And there's a lot of cards that are right, you know, that it looks like maybe they're good enough to take another card's place. Maybe they're not. So it feels like there's like at least 20 or 30 cards to try in a bunch of different decks, not counting the lands. And yeah, it's going to be a pretty intense couple of weeks when the set comes out.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've been reading through the spoilers as well, and nothing jumping out too much for older formats, but lots of text and lots of powerful abilities and aggressive costs on things that make me think this is going to have pretty significant impact in Standard.
Yeah.
If you go into like a 12 set Standard format, maybe it doesn't get, you know, maybe its impact is diluted, but you know, there's a lot of options, right?
Yeah, I'm not even sure I have one card that I'm like, yeah, that's a slam dunk. That card's gonna be much better than what exists. You know, not counting Inspiring Vantage in Boros. You know, not counting the fast land in the decks. I want the fast land, but the non land spells, the creatures, but there's a lot of like scary stuff. There's the crime mechanism, seems like it could be good. Even the saddle mount thing could be good. Are you gonna help your teammates test a bit, Canister?
Perhaps a tiny bit, but I haven't been taking much of a look at the cards through the Standard lens just yet.
All right, so I can't really, you know, get in super details, even though. You know, we can take a bit of that Standard. Why don't you talk to us about the new cards and their impact you think they could have in Pioneer or Modern? What caught your eye there?
All right, so first, let's talk about Smuggler's Surprise. First, we have to explain the Spree mechanic, which is basically Kicker. There are cards that have a base cost and they have a little plus in the upper corner, which indicates that you can add any amount of the effects from the list in the text box.
Oh, I haven't noticed that little superscript.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that means that like the mana value of the card changes on the stack, but
I think they said it's just a little symbol to remind people that you can't just pay the card. Like these cards do. You're not even allowed to pay them for without one of the spree effects.
Oh, you're not even allowed to?
No.
Yeah, you're not allowed to play.
Choose one or more. Yeah, additional classes. Okay, interesting. Strange templating. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
Yeah. So basically, like, you know, strange templating, but basically it is just Kicker, right? So a mechanic we all know. Smuggler's Surprise is one of those cards. It's an instant with a base cost of green, and then the free effects are for +2 colorless mana, it's mill 4 cards, and then from among those you can grab a creature and or a land. No, it's actually up to 2 creature and or lands from among those into your hand.
Just from the milled cards, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you look at top 4, you grab 2, and then you put the rest into your graveyard. +5, +4 and a green. You may put up to 2 creature cards from your hand onto the battlefield, and then +1 colorless, creatures you control with power 4 or greater gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. So I have to like admit I just love divinations, and whenever I see one I just probably evaluate it as much better than it ends up being in practice. So like upon seeing this card I made a tongue-in-cheek tweet where I said that my Primal Titans will never get saddled again, .. which I will try this card in Amulet. I will put a few copies in Amulet and I will try to run it through a few prelims expecting nothing and being pleasantly surprised if I get something out of it. But you know, the combination of effects, there is some solid options here, right? Like for 3 mana I can draw 2 cards, more or less, with some extra selection going, like you can try to find your Titan or any other creature, or like, you know, get 2 lands, that's not nothing. And then, you know, spending a card to pull your Titans into play for 6 mana is not necessarily all that great, because of course your Titan has the basic ability of just being, like, you're able to cast it for 6 mana, right? But you know, getting to cast that instant speed maybe helps you play around Counterspell or some other interaction a little bit. And then, you know, the last ability can be used to give your Titan some extra protection, which is not irrelevant. You know, you normally don't play cards like that, but having it there is just an added bonus. And then you'll have the option of just, you know, casting it as a Hail Mary for the full cost, which is 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 mana. You get to look at the top cards, grab your Titan from there, and then just summon it immediately and grant it protection from any upcoming Solitudes or Leyline Bindings that might go your way. So it's at least interesting to me.
There is a lot of good things going on in this card, I think.
Yeah,
like just the utility kind of fits in a number of different important roles. I like that you highlighted the idea of kind of essentially end of turn Titan, untap Titan play patterns as being pretty powerful functionality. I imagine most of the time you're casting this for 3, and then probably slightly less of the time you're casting it for 2, and then the least often is for 6 or more. But honestly, I think this card's probably pretty good. And you were talking about ways of getting away from Summoner's Pact.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking for like ways to dig deeper into my deck to find Titan and cast it naturally like every time I can. So
it doesn't have a great amount of synergy with stuff like, you know, the One Ring, which, you know, is a pretty is a mainstay of Titan from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe you need to think about building a deck a little bit differently. But if your deck is all hits for the divination effect, pretty damn powerful, I think.
Yeah, that's the one thing Titan's not known for, is playing at instant speed, and now all of a sudden you have to start respecting
the
cheating mana. Now they can tax your mana, you know, in the mid game, so you can't just keep that one interaction spell and know you're safe. It can be a game changer.
Yeah, so like as I said, I'm not expecting much, but I'm opening myself to be pleasantly surprised by this card, because I think it's not entirely out of the question.
Yeah, does this remind you of Tooth and Nail at all?
Yeah, a bit. People made that comparison. It seems like a much, much better card than Tooth and Nail.
Oh, it'd be hard to be worse than Tooth and Nail. Tooth and Nail did a specific thing.
There's one thing that I don't get about this card, and I have to ask you guys about it. Namely, what is a Trojan House doing on a cowboy plane? How does it all connect? Is it like some cultural reference that I'm missing, or
this set seems to be a kind of just a soup of cultural references that do not seem interrelated at all, and everyone's wearing a cowboy hat.
Yeah, I don't know. I know it's mostly like Twitter outrage and kind of feels like manufactured drama. Maybe not, but it's kind of crazy to me. I was, you know, the lore was literally always the last thing on my mind when I was playing Magic, and now a little more, you know, I like hearing about the lore when I'm streaming, and but that people are just kind of losing it was so invested. It's fine, you know, but it's just, you know, a little taken aback, I guess, some of the takes I've seen and the way some people feel, but, you know.
I certainly think that, you know, the way people discuss it is important, is probably important to them and very unimportant to me, but I understand what they're pointing out. It almost feels like an unset in some respects, like unglued or unhinged or whatever. Just in the, you know, pictures of sharks in the middle of the desert, and like you point out, like, why is this Trojan horse here in this like sort of like campy Western themed set? Kind of these like hokey 50s American tropes, and then suddenly there's Greek mythology / history kind of going on here. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah,
maybe they're trying to steal. Are they coming out of the horse,
or
are they
going
into the horse? Yeah, I think they're coming out of the horse there, yeah.
Seems like they are smuggling and there's a surprise. So like, I don't know how it all connects into in the biggest picture, but
it's also a little scary for Standard. There's a few cards that like play well with Atraxa, which is already
That's another part, right? Because there are a few kind of reanimator-ish or like ramp style decks in Standard. This is, you know, probably got some utility there.
There's a Smuggler's Surprise card that maybe is good in Domain or maybe good in other Atraxa decks. You know, it's self-mail, so potentially in the reanimator version. There's also a 5-mana, kind of leads us to Plot, which is one of the big mechanists of the set. And it's a 5-mana uncommon, it's blue-green, you draw 3 cards, and then you plot one of them. And what the Plot does is, basically, it's kind of like Foretell. You pay the plot cost, and then you can play it for free later, or there's a few other variations, but yeah, it's basically Foretell. And, you know, what that card does potentially is for 5-mana, you draw 3, and then if one of your free cards is Atraxa, you get to play it for free on a subsequent turn. It doesn't have to be the turn right after, but you're probably gonna play the turn right after. You're gonna have a track sign play with all your mana for all the spells you hit. There's a Smuggler's Cup there, Smuggler's Surprise card. There's also, maybe you're getting to that in Pioneer. There's a lot of ways to plot Valky. I believe the rules, Dev confirmed that that's how the rules work. So for instance, you have the new Planeswalker. One of the new Planeswalker is Jace Reawakened. It costs 2 blue, but you can only play it. Well, you can't cast this spell during your first, second, or third turn of the game. So technically, if you have a way to flash it into play like the blue Leyline, you can play it on turn 2, but most likely you're going to play on turn 4. It starts with 3 loyalty plus 1 loyalty, so up to 4, draw a card, then discard a card. And the other plus 1 is you may exile a non-land card with mana value 3 or less from your hand. If you do, it becomes plotted. So technically, you can go turn 4 Jace, plus 1, plot your Valky, and on turn 5, you get to play the Valky, even if they got rid of the Jace. There's a few other, I think there's a 3-mana enchantment, Bant Enchantment, that plots a card. So, obviously, ripe for abuse was Valky, and it seems a bit better to me than the convoluted, what's the name of that card, the instant that you have to play your Valky, have it live, blink it.
Oh, yeah. Something about the wind, return to the wind. I spent about a week of my life ruining release of the wind. Yeah, I ruined a week of my life trying to get that card to work.
Yeah, so potentially these cards could see play in Standard. Plot also lets you play the Cascade spells, the free spell. So maybe a balance deck, maybe in, you know, I've been playing I've tried a list today of Living In that only has the Bloodbraid Marauder, the free one. It has Cascade if you have Delirium. Free one, can't block for 2 mana. And it's a really cool build. It has that split card that's Incubation something. Basically, for 1 mana, you look at the top 5, you take a creature, So that gives you like, it's a spark tree and an instance. It gives you two types. So it was a fetch land and a creature. That's Delirium. And, you know, Jace could maybe fit in that deck. I don't know. There's a lot of things that seems like, you know, could go wrong with Splot in Pioneer or Modern.
It's kind of a interesting mechanic to evaluate. I like the way it seems to it reads and you think it will play on the surface at a kind of surface level. I like this idea of, you know, face up information and then, you know, casting spells with mana rip, and that's kind of, you know, an interesting way to kind of balance the power level in something like Standard, but, you know, very much likely to go wrong, I think, in older formats. And I would expect that, you know, they just have to go ahead and just axe things that become problematic, you know, case by case basis, rather than just overhaul the plot entirely. But yeah, I don't know. Jace's Chasery Awaken card looks really interesting to me. Yeah, two mana planeswalkers, even if they come down in turn four, that's powerful. I mean, this is like, you know, much better than Tibalt. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, if you play Jace Reawakened, you plot your Valky. That just means it was turn four. You spent two of your mana, then you still have two mana up for interacting, and then next turn you can play your Tibalt and like all of your mana is free. So like you plus your Tibalt, you reveal two new cards. You can just play them immediately because you have the mana available. That seems powerful.
I mean, I'm certainly gonna be trying it.
Yeah, no, it does seem like, you know, I was expecting maybe them to have like some justification on why the plot wouldn't work with Tibalt, but yeah, it's just not the case. Anything else that you think might have an impact in Pioneer or Modern?
All right, so next card I wanted to mention is yet another Spree card, and this time it's blue. 3 steps ahead. Base cost is 1 blue. It's an instant, and you can pay +1 and a blue to counter target spells, so you get a cancel. You can pay +3 colorless mana to create a token that's a copy of target artifact or creature you control, which is, you know, nice to have, but kind of expensive and kind of whatever, although it's instant speed. And then +2 colorless to draw 2 cards, then discard a card. So, you know, ever since No More Lies, I guess Control doesn't tend to play as many or even any cancels anymore, but as far as cancels go, this one gets pretty neatly, pretty close to Cryptic Command in Valley, I would say. You get to, you know, counter a spell and then get ahead on cards at the same time if you have a lot of mana. Or you get to use the nice modality where you get to just either counter, or you can just dig through your deck to hit your land drops on turn 3 if your opponent refuses to play into 3 steps ahead. So, you know, of course, I would like to know your opinion, Gab, as you are the most control-pilled on this podcast.
Yeah, I was getting vibes of that card that's really good in the Vintage Cube, right? Mystic Confluence, I believe. The 5-mana triple, you get to pick 3 modes, usually counter a spell, draw 2 cards. But yeah, I've been playing Confounding Riddle in Standard and Pioneer, and, you know, it's not strictly better than Riddle, because sometimes you're going to Riddle on turn 3, you get to see top 4, it fuels your dig for time, and making someone pay 4 more mana is usually counter for much of the game, so not strictly better, but it does seem like it would take its place. It does seem like it's the best cancel ever printed.
And it's certainly better than cancel, that's for sure.
Yeah, just a bit. Yeah. I even have the cool ability that you can tutor for it with Micromancer, which is a card I've played in Blue-Black Pioneer before.
Immaculate.
All nice. These spells are. I think they all cause base of 1 mana, right?
There's a few that do not, but most of them do.
Yeah. I think there's a cycle of rares that start at 1 mana.
Yeah. No, that card's really good.
Yeah.
I will say regarding plot is a great way to play around counter spells to punish your opponent for keeping either counter spell or removal mana up. You just plot your spell on turn 2. One of the best cards, one of the best plot cards that they printed is a 1/2 for 2. It has flying and haste, a bird wizard. and it has the kill field ability, I believe, or even better, non-creature spell. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, it gets +2/+2 until enough turns. So you can play it on two, plot it on two, and they kept, you know, make disappear mana up or push or whatnot. They don't get a good target, and then comes down into play, maybe even have a spell cures backup or protection spell, you know, whether you're playing Prowess or Heroic, that kind of deck. And, you know, the plot mechanism in general is nice player on counter, so three steps ahead is really good, but I guess plot in some ways is...
Yeah, good. This is the sort of thing that's like, those are play patterns for Standard that are going to be really interesting, I think. So for three steps ahead, I've been playing a bit of blue-white in Standard and desperate for a hard counter, and this is the perfect hard counter. You've got these kind of, you know, flexible slots where you've got maybe your card draw is deduce, and then maybe you've got a couple of slots that might go to, say, a quick study or something else, or you might want to try and, you know, I've been trying Confounding Riddle like Gab was talking about earlier, and this is exactly, three steps ahead is exactly the sort of card I want to put in those kind of like one or two flex slots for hard counters in blue-white control and Standard.
Yeah, because you have Wandering Emperor and Deluge on 4 to punish people.
Yeah.
But on 3, you don't, you know, I mean, Deluge is not bad, but...
Yeah, you're spewing on 3 a lot. Like, a lot of time you like spending 2 mana or something like that, or maybe you're marching something they cast on turn 2. But yeah, the 3 drop slot is really weak. And also, you know, people play a lot of lands in Standard, and No More Lies becomes dead actually quite fast. And it's, you know, people are good at playing around it. It's not... You know, decks are set up to be able to play around it, except if it gets a Heroic or whatever, which is just going under it. And so it's got surprisingly little utility in mid-range to, like, you know, two late game decks battling. And so having hard counters is actually a huge trump there. Yeah, so I was winning a lot of mirrors online, or, you know, pseudo mirrors online, by having some cancels in my deck, whereas they just had No More Lies and would never counter a spell.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Really interesting card, and but like you said, I like that. I think it's like Slingshot Spelljack or some nonsense, the prowess creature that's obviously really quite powerful and probably impactful outside of Standard as well.
Yeah, the Slingshot, it's called
Slingshot. That's Slingshot.
Slingshot show off.
Terrible name. That is impossible to pronounce.
Yeah, you guys got me thinking about this card. It's actually even a wizard, which is. Minor, yeah. But nice, you know. Probably not going to play it alongside
Camel. Discounts Wizard Lightning.
Yeah, but Wizard Lightning more likely. People. But, like, you know, you got me thinking even if you play this card in, like, a Phoenix deck, right? You're like, you can plot it on two, and then if your opponent, like, ever taps out, they're risking just getting hit for 1,000 damage, so.
Yeah, I guess, like, if you're just chaining cantrips or something on the turn, you cast it as well. Things you're going to do anyway.
Pretty fast clock.
Yeah, that's no joke.
Yeah, it plays around Graveyard Hate, plays around counter spells, plays around. No, there's a lot going on. There's maybe a card that could go into coffers. I think it's a little too weak for coffers, but it is another of these pre spells. It's the black one, Insatiable Avarice. I probably butchered that. It's a sorcery. It has, you know, the one black mana cost, and then +2 colorless, search your library for a card, then shuffle it and put that card on top. So 3 mana, sorcery speed, kind of vampiric tutor, except it doesn't cost you the life. And the other plus is +2 black, target player draws 3 cards and loses 3 life. So for 3 mana, you VM tutor, or for 3 mana, you draw 3 lose 3. You can target your opponent. If they're low on life, or if you have a shield right in play, I think it deals, 9 damage. And for 5 mana, you get to tutor a card on top, draw 3, so you draw that card +2 more. So pretty strong late game engine. It could maybe see play in Standard, just you probably want to be mono black with that mana cost, because I'm assuming the most common use of that card is going to be to draw 3 on turn 3. But so that would be triple black on turn 3.
Yeah, I would assume.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I would assume that the way you want to play this card is to just mainly play it as a black, draw 3, and then it also has an extra kicker effect where if you're flooded, you get to actually choose one of the cards you're drawing in a top deck situation. So, yeah, that doesn't sound sound too bad. Painful Truths had some history in its own standard format. I certainly tried to play Painful Truths and the sideboard of Amalia before. Probably not gonna do that with this card specifically, but as you said, maybe Coffers actually will be interested in an effect like this.
Yeah, a little bit awkward with Field of Ruins and Field of Devastations, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, still, yeah, pretty powerful on the surface. And I also have a long sorted history of casting Painful Truths and losing through life. It's one of my favorite cards from that. One of my favorite eras of Standard, actually, that can't attack here Standard.
Yeah, it might be better into like mono black, like the list that Spike's been playing, or some people play that don't really have cover. You can almost not play Field of Ruin into just Voidwalker kind of mid range with Shieldred as your top end. And,
yeah, right, okay.
And you could just get to nuke people for 9. I don't know how often that's going to happen, but. but yeah, there's a million cards. There's a Standard Arena qualifier coming up in a couple of weeks. Pat, you've been playing a bit of Standard, actually.
Yeah. If I had cards on Arena, maybe I would think about playing it, but it's a bit awkward. I've really, really been enjoying Standard, actually, and you know, appreciating that there's like just enough incentive for people to play it that I can fly a Magic Online leagues in, you know, with a queue time of less than like a minute and a half, and it's just been really fun again. I just like the low power level. I think that the format actually feels like it's well put together. Like the kind of, it's interesting kind of having sat and watched competitive Magic through this lens of like Eternal formats for, you know, the last 5 years or so, where when new sets come out, you're like not massively incentivized to like care about them in the fine detail. So there's like not very many cards that are for you, and then it feels like your power level's kind of spiraling out of control, things are getting crazy and kind of unwieldy, and how long can this go on for? But then when you look at it through the lens of Standard, actually it's quite coherent and things work well together. There's counterplay to lots of different strategies. There's a variety of things, a variety of experiences going on. And the kind of, although, yeah, like the power level of cards is quite high, I didn't feel like any of these games were like so super snowball-y that like it was just, you know, the game was over if I stumbled or anything like that. And, you know, maybe Boris Kavok's an exception, but I've really enjoyed the kind of pace of play of Standard and kind of renewed kind of attention on it. And I really hope that they capitalize on what sounded like kind of positive reviews of things on, at least on social media, from this last RCQ season and their PT coming up. And hopefully that kind of gets a little bit of momentum going back in Standard, because I would love to spend more time thinking and talking about it, because it's honestly, it's really fun. And you're kind of like playing a tap land on turn one and passing the turn, and they're kind of not doing anything, not worrying about what was going to happen on turn two too much. And it was feeling like, you know, you can settle in for a game of, you know, lots and lots and lots of turns where decisions matter all the way through. And I thought that was really, you know, it's a refreshing feeling, I think.
Yeah, there's a bunch of different decks. You know, you can play Domain, you can play Control, mid-range, aggro. You do have some snowball games. Gigs can get out of control. Or, you know, just I've played some decks where I'm doing some cool stuff and then they just cast an Atraxa with Cavern of Souls and that's just game over. There's the Ram decks, the crazy Nissa with Analyze Aftermath decks. That's,
oh yeah, I've been the lands decks as well. They're great.
Yeah, that deck's really strong. That's, I got to Mythic. I don't think I'm gonna quite make it to the numbers, but, and that was, I think, the best deck, and I'm sure my version could use a lot of tuning. I was just kind of playing the stock list. There's also the Sultai version, which loops Jace with Takanuma and Slowgurk. That one I just had to give up. I thought it was pretty good, but I was just roping, doing the, you had to loop Takanuma with Jace multiple times, and if they made you do it, I was just roping out and losing more often than not.
Yeah, so I've played against that a lot on Magic Online. That's not a very fun game one for blue-white control.
Mm-mm. Yeah, you didn't start adding like weird stuff to your main deck to not like auto lose game one.
I mean, my main deck already has a Jace in it, so I don't want to lose. So I have a huge edge in the kind of the control mirror in game one, and there's not really. And I have a Farewell. Farewell is basically your best card against that looping Jace deck in game one. Yeah. Just like a six mana exile, like Bajuka Bog.
Yeah, get rid of your lands.
Not exactly high excitement magic, but you know, you're praying to find it.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that deck's gonna gain much. I don't think I've seen anything that like.
I mean, it's just hard to say with decks like that. They're so unintuitive to me to look at and think about what goes on in them. I love playing against them. I think that sort of experience in Magic's fantastic, but I don't have a kind of intuitive grasp of those sort of things very much.
Yeah, I saw someone tweet saying that the stock list is bad and their list is much better, and that for
like, who would
500
know,
but... likes or whatever, yeah, they'll share their list in a guide. So I was wondering, like, what are we missing something on?
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that actually. Yeah, I like to imagine that their list is just like a slightly different choice of those fetch lands or whatever, so they can more optimally get Slowgoke mana on turn, yeah, like turn 87 or something like that. Who knows? Yeah, actually, they have 68 cards and everyone's stock list is 67. So
yeah, I will say that deck. I've heard a lot of people frustrated by that deck. That it's not super fun to play against. It's kind of hard to attack. The life gain, the one life gain every time you sack a land, kind of adds up. It's crazy.
Very minor sympathy for that. I feel like that's just kind of exactly what you're signing up for in Magic, is like this kind of things like that can happen. Like, it's exactly why the game was great, right? Like, you're kind of, I remember the first time I saw someone do something that was operating on a completely different axis, suddenly cards stop, the casting cost of cards stop mattering, or like power toughness stop mattering. Like, those things are really, really wonderful, I think, in Magic.
Yeah, no, I agree, for sure.
It can't be the whole experience, but yeah, if it's a part of the experience, that's just quite important to me, I think.
Yeah, they're bringing back the streamers event to April 10. So
like the pre-release stream.
Yeah, on Arena. Cool. So I'm gonna be able to try out all the lists people send me.
All right. I've got, by the way, speaking of this lands deck, and even though I said I could never look at cards and think they might go well in them, this card mentions lands. So this is a new card from today. Pillage the Bog. It's a black-green sorcery. It's a rare. It has plot, one black, one green, and its text is, look at the top X cards of your library, where X is twice the number of lands you control. Put one of them in your hand and the rest in the bottom of your library in any order.
Yeah, so two mana, you look at the top four, take one, the cards don't go in the graveyard, and then if you plot it on three and then play it on four, you know, probably look at eight cards. Is that that exciting?
It's definitely, in the late game, it's going to look at your entire deck.
That is true, but so does Diabolic Tutor.
Diabolic Tutor plus four mana.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that card's a little too weak, but that could be.
I mean, it says lands, and I think it's sort of powerful. It's two mana look. It's two mana impulse.
It's like impulse that turns into like close to a tutor. So DT. I guess it's not too bad, right? You know, having a buyout of being able to cast it reasonably on turn two is probably okay.
I will cite this forever. Gab has a terrible, terrible, terrible track record of things that look like anticipate, sorcery speed anticipates.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. I was thinking about it.
So no chance I'm not bringing that one up. For the rest of my life, I will know that I thought expressive iteration was good on first glance, and Gab thought it was bad. Just remember that. In case anyone ever questions my credentials on this podcast.
There's no way that card is like on the level of iteration.
Yeah, obviously not. It doesn't draw two cards. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found when I was playing against that lands deck actually is this kind of like, the game is like progressing in this weird way where no one's really doing anything, and suddenly they piece it together and like they're looping and it's done. And it requires them to get this kind of, you know, they have to have the Takanuma and the mana set up, and then the Jace, and you know, if they don't have one part or the other, or you kind of manage to exile their graveyard or something like that, it becomes difficult. But they can rebuild with cards like this, and you know, this is definitely DT in the late game. It might not necessarily be the sort of card you need to play lots of copies of. You just play like two or three, maybe one or two copies, and it's, you know, impulse when you need it, and DT when you're lucky.
Yeah. I'm not a big believer on that one, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fine.
Any other cards that either of you wanted to mention? Crickets? All right. I feel like maybe in a couple of weeks, next up, we could do a... You know, I'm not going to want to talk about Standard. I think most people who listen to the podcast care more about Modern Pioneer. So maybe we can do a more, you know, think about it a bit more. There'll be some new cards and kind of do a spoiler review with the lens of Pioneer and Modern.
Yeah, I would be very happy to kind of put a little bit of time and thought into making top five lists or something like that, or top 10 lists for Eternal formats.
All right, want to put our lives on the line?
What formats? I guess Modern and Standard.
So, for those of you who don't know what Life on the Line is, it's a theoretical tournament. If you win, you live. If you lose, you die. Shout out to Harry MTG. I actually saw him in London not long ago. I was in London and lunch with him. He's doing good. I guess we've talked about all three. Let's do all three formats. Let's do Modern, Pioneer, and Standard. Who wants to go first?
Not me.
All right, I'll go first. So Modern, I'm playing the Modern Challenge tomorrow. I think I'm going to play Spike's White Black Smallpox Sorin Vamp deck with Bloodgust and Veinreaper. It sounds weird, but I played a prelim today with it. I went 3-1. I feel like I punted the match I lost, and the deck drew surprisingly well, surprisingly consistent. Or I might just play his new broken deck with Altar and Phoenix. I don't know. Spike somehow just churns out, you know, a competitive deck every other day. I don't know how he does it.
It's the Lamplight Phoenix, Altar of Dementia, right?
Yeah, he played a Jund version like a week ago, and it was like not the greatest. And then this version, I think, has Scion and Leyline in it, and I forget what else. You can just, you know, go check out his stream at Aspiring Spike on Twitter. But I know CFOTCS or
CFT Suck. Yeah, I've played against CFT Suck during one of the Modern LCQs for the Mox tournament. Like I think 2 weeks ago, on a deck like this. Of course, it seems like it was one of the decks on that. CFT Suck chose to run with over 60 cards in seemingly like a never-ending quest of finding decks where it makes sense to play 66 to 70 cards. And you know, in that deck it kind of does, right? You have to like mill yourself a bunch of times, and you need to have like a high enough total mana value in your deck to return your Lamplight Phoenix from the graveyard over and over, and then eventually mill your opponent fully.
Yeah, because the Phoenix has Collect Evidence 4, so you collect evidence. When you sack it to the altar, it dies, you bring it back, you mill yourself. It's a bit like what's the name of that 3-4 Abzan creature, where you didn't have infinite mill, but you usually had enough.
The one that... What's it called again?
You mean Kethys? Legend.
Yeah, Kethys, yeah.
Kethys, yeah.
So that's a bit the same with Phoenix. Like if your opponent showed up with a 300 card deck, you could never mill them because you don't have infinite mill, but you usually have just enough. So
once again, you're making a mockery of Life on the Line.
We moved a bit fast from Modern to Standard, so I was like, I took my chance to talk a bit more about Modern.
Fine. But you're lowering the bar. Consistently lowering the bar.
I also played a league with the Bloodbraid version of Living End, Bloodbraid Marauder. I only went 2-3, but I was kind of impressed. I thought I ran kind of bad, and that deck was interesting. Anyways, Life on the Line. Smallpox Vamps, let's go. Pioneer, I would play. There's actually the Arena Championship this weekend. That's Explorer and Draft, so Explorer is kind of like Pioneer. I think the meta is out, and it's literally 50% Vamps. I would just play... If it was open deck list, I would play Blue-Black. If it was a big tournament, I would just play my Blue-Black control deck. And in Standard... I think I would just play Team or Nissa right now. There was some stats from Anael Yahi, as always, I think. Maybe someone else this time. Anyways, that deck had like one of the best win rates, and I was impressed when I played that deck on the ladder. All right, that's my three choices. Who's next?
All right, okay. I think I'm ready. So in Modern, I'm going to play Murmur's Modern Challenge winning Blue-Black Death Shadow deck. Because I've already played some of it, and it looks really sweet.
Anything special in it?
Nothing really amazing. Nothing crazy. It's just, you know, Death Shadows, Orcish Bowmasters, Murktide Regents, and then like 19 lands with like Counterspells, Drowning Lorks, Fatal Push, and Stubborn Denials, and a whole bunch of discard and cantrips. I just like the way it plays. It's in my wheelhouse. I like casting Thoughtseize and Counterspell. Having those two guards in my deck is usually a recipe for success. And it's also got access to a whole bunch of edict effects that you can either splash green for Pick Your Poison, or you can play Shieldred's Edict, so you've got some game against Sign of Draco decks. Two dress down in the main. And yeah, I just like that. I like the way it plays. And I like Death Shadow against Zoo. If like Zoo decks are pretty good, I think Death Shadow is actually pretty powerful. If they're just trying to attack your life total in chunks, having access to Death Shadow is good. So I would play that deck in Modern. Pioneer, I haven't thought about Pioneer at all. I'm going to come back to Pioneer. In Standard, I would play Blue Eye Control, and I would play a few copies of Cancel in my deck. So I think Disruption Protocol is the one I'm playing at the moment, which is the blue-blue. Tap an artifact or play one extra hard counter. I feel like just having a few copies of Cancel in your deck really kind of take that deck from pretty fragile to quite, you know, pretty far ahead against a lot of decks. Particularly in game one, I think it gets a little bit worse post-board, but in game one, it's pretty good to configure yourself like that. And so I take that. And in Pioneer, honestly, I just don't know what I mean.
Flip a coin, Phoenix or Vamps.
Okay, so I have to choose between Phoenix and Vampires. Okay, all right. I would probably play Vampires or your Blue Black Control deck. Honestly, I would be perfectly happy doing that too. Maybe I'll play Blue Black Control. Just Blue Black in all formats, basically, or Blue Control in all formats.
All right.
Canister?
All right. For Modern, trusty Amulet Titan. For Pioneer, the last time I have played, I was really, really impressed by the general power of the Vampires deck, so I'm choosing to put Vayne Repair into play on turn 3. And I'm scared of having to play against Vayne Repair out of the Smallpox deck tomorrow, perhaps. And for Standard, I would be really interested in trying out those. Well, of course, it's Life on the Line, so it would be pretty scary to try out a deck in such a tournament, but I'm really curious about those land decks now. And
yeah, dude, you like to put extra lands into play. You like to cheat lands into play.
Yeah,
exactly. Right, and I haven't had an opportunity to play with those decks in practice, so.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah, either the Slugger builds or the Timur ones.
Yeah.
Whichever one of those.
All right, cool. Well, if you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episodes. Guys, where can we find you on the internet? Pat, where can we find you?
You can find me just trying to get my life in order.
All right, what about you, Canister?
Twitch.tv/Canister_MTG, obviously.
Nice. Same here, twitch.tv/yellowhat. We'll be streaming some Modern. What's your plan? Modern Challenge tomorrow and Modern on Sunday?
Just the challenge tomorrow. Skipping tomorrow. Sunday, spending it with family.
Same here. Yeah, thanks for listening. Hope you all have a great week, and we'll see you next time. Take care, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.